I don't have a nickname, per se.
Papageno.
I don't mind being Papageno. Did Chris already take Papageno?
I thought Chris took Papa.
Oh, I was going to do expected music, so if you want to
go ahead.
I'll do Papageno.
Papageno.
I have like an untitled notepad. I have a few of them on my, I just put thoughts in it sometimes, but I don't give myself any context. And I've done this a couple times with this one where I keep coming back to it, and I have to have a moment where I'm like, what on earth? And then I remember the context. It's just, what it says, literally, it's three lines. It says, coffin corner, meat grinder, offside trap.
Oh, is this your shopping list?
It's my shopping list, yeah.
Papageno.
Papageno. To another episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down, have a nice drink, watch a not-so-nice movie, talk about what was good, what was bad, and how we could make it so much better. I am your host for this week, Lee Papageno Delahanty.
I am Chris Expectant Music Ravel.
And I am Brendan What a Donut Drizzler.
If you could not tell from those amazing nicknames.
What a Donut.
What a donut!
What a donut! What a donut!
My favorite aria from the Magic Flute.
What a donut! What a donut! He's a donut! He's a donut! He's a donut!
What a donut!
Perfect.
But yes, if you could have dealt with
what we
watched.
Well, frankly, neither can we.
It was a very specific 2022 production. Of a, we're going to call it a movie called The Magic Flute.
Yes.
Let's not call it the opera.
No, it is loosely based on and incorporating the opera.
Going on with the opera. I don't have the details of this movie. Maybe you have it up. It was directed by someone, presumably, and also stars some people, including Ramsay Bolton.
Lee, you got it in one. That's The Magic Flute. It is directed by a person and starring some other people.
Yeah.
It is directed by someone named Florian Sigel. I don't know how to say it. S-I-G-L. I think
Siegel.
They're German, so I assume that's it. We've got, basically, there's not going to be in here that we know aside from F. Murray Abraham as the asshole headmaster, Dr. Longbow. Anyone else, and Ramsay Bolton as Papageno. And aside from that, it's mostly a lot of like twinks, some opera people.
There are probably some like college, middle school, high school people that are really upset that we don't know who Jack Wolf is.
Yes, I'm sure,
putting respect on his name.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of like very aggressive West End theater nerds who are like, how dare you do disrespect to Jack Wolf by
they
not.
They stop creating fan cams for a second to send us enraged tweets.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, basically that's it. There's not a lot of actors in here whom we would recognize. Some of them are opera singers who presumably have careers of their own, but this is not an area of expertise that we really have.
Yep.
So by and large, we will not, I think, be referring to actors in this episode.
Which is no comment on their talent. They're
We just don't know these people.
A lot of them probably were cast for singing over acting, and the rest are probably just European.
Which can I say, especially just, you know, you see so many film musicals nowadays that just stick with people who are maybe not the best singers to lead them in film musicals.
Yeah, but again,
it was kind of nice to have actual professionals behind the helm.
But it's nice, but also, Chris, they're not going to get fucking Chris Pine to show up.
Of course.
No. If only Chris Pine is Papageno. I will say, though, sort of commenting on that, though, Chris, I feel like if you looked into what opera nerds would think about this, there would, I'm sure, be a lot of pithy remarks about how only three of the actors can actually sing the score well, and everyone else is just sort of, like, doing okay.
And doing, like, pop voice.
I
read several Reddit threads about it.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
The phrase pop girl was employed.
Okay, yeah. Very unsurprising.
Yeah.
So that's The Magic Flute.
Yeah.
We made a drink, though, too,
We did make a drink, yes. And what did we drink?
The drink that we made was called the Queen of the Night. It was one part Owen's transfusion mix, one part gin, luster dust, and thyme. Gently mix equal parts Owen's transfusion mix and gin in a flute glass with luster dust, garnish with a sprig of thyme. Owen's transfusion mix, for those who don't know, a transfusion is a cocktail that's Concord grape juice, ginger ale, and vodka. The transfusion mix itself is just the ginger and Concord grape juice part of it. So basically, I think we talked about this before, this is supposed to basically be like a nighttime version of a Bellini, basically, because it's the queen of the night.
It's a nighttime Bellini.
So it's a purple take.
I think successfully so. It was dark and swirly. It had a really nice sparkle to it. It felt like a dead ringer visually, but also kind of taste-wise for Vanique.
I was sitting, of course, as I was pouring in the lustrous, like, it reminded me so much of the first drink we made for Black Hole way back in the day.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, purple and sparkles.
Yeah, it was a little too sweet. Just a touch too sweet for me. Mm-hmm. But drinkable, very good. It looked really good.
Mm-hmm. It does look good. Luster Dust, it must be said, really adds something to a drink aesthetically. Yeah. If you're looking for that extra oomph, chuck in some Luster Dust.
Yeah.
Take some of ours. We still have like a container that we bought 6 years ago.
Oh my God, if you just want to like flex on your friends, pop some in your gin or vodka.
Yeah, it'll look cool as hell.
Or you know what? When you go get them a glass of water, put a little pinch of Luster Dust in there. Yeah. See what they think.
When you're making them some hamburgers, throw some Luster Dust on that hamburger.
Why not?
Sparkly beef.
I love sparkly beef.
All right, so this movie is so sort of weird and obscure. There's no summary for the movie, so what we're going to do is Chris is going to explain the opera in as short as possible, and then we'll go over the framing narrative happens around it.
So just giving a quick shout out. Typically, this is Wikipedia, right? But instead, quick shout out to Opera North for offering this little article that was...
Opera South represent.
That was entitled Magic Flute in a Nutshell. It is nighttime and a young girl is swept away by the power of her imagination into a world where nothing is as it first appears. Here she finds Tamino, a handsome prince who is lost in this strange land and is being pursued by a monstrous serpent. Three mysterious women appear who are servants of the Queen of the Night and slay the monster. Afterwards, they give Tamino a portrait of the queen's daughter, Pamina, and he falls instantly in love, vowing to rescue her from the evil Sarastro, priest of the sun, in whose faraway temple she has been imprisoned. The three women give Tamino a magic flute to help in his quest, and with the aid of the bird catcher, Papageno. Thank you. Tamino journeys to Sarastro's temple and meets Pamina for the first time. Tamino learns that it is not Sarastro who is evil, but the Queen of the Night, and that Pamina was only being held to keep her hidden from her mother. Sarastro gives Tamino a new quest. He must now undergo a series of trials to prove himself worthy of Pamina's love. Using the power of the magic flute, Tamino and Pamina are able to overcome their trials and earn the right to be with each other. At the moment of their success, the Queen of the Night arrives with her servants to storm the temple and destroy it, but Sarastro appears and defeats them, casting them out. And the sun rises on a new era for the United Heroes.
Yay.
Right. So some of that is in the movie.
Yeah.
Some of that is not.
They did definitely nutshell it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
No, but I'm also saying, like, even it's, the movie nutshelled it even more than that. In that,
the movie
like,
doesn't have the time the opera has.
Right.
And
so, like,
no shit.
You have shit like in the movie, the Queen of Night does not show up again at the end. I don't recall them ever saying that Sarastro is the King of the Sun or whatever.
Priest
of the Sun.
They never say that.
Yeah, so...
They do mention he lives at the Temple of the Sun.
I guess, that's true, I suppose. Yeah. But, like, maybe he's just squatting there, who can say? but, yeah, so by and large, that is the bones of what's happening in this movie.
Yeah, so that's what the opera's about. It's not what this movie's about.
No.
The movie's about a kid. His name is Tim.
His name
is Tim.
Tim!
It's really awkward because he does look like an AI Timothy Chalamet.
Definitely.
Paul's pointed out.
Yep, a little pointy Chalamet face.
A little elfin changeling boy.
Yes.
Yeah, even more so possibly than a baby Jojen Reed in Love Actually.
For real.
Tim's dad is dying, and then he dies very quickly in short order. Is dying, and then is dead. So Tim's dad is dead. Now, Tim...
To begin with.
Tim, they're a musical family. Tim's dad was into music. Tim's dad went to a place called Mozart's Academy, and he was like, Tim, I want... There's nothing more...
Mozart's International School.
Whatever it's called.
Mozart's School.
For
magic twins.
So it's his dying wishes. I want you to go to this school, even though I'm gonna die and then your mom's gonna be all alone. Go do that. And so he has to go to the school because that's what the dad wants. He goes to school. F. Murray Abraham is a mean headmaster. It kind of bullies him. Also, the students are all kind of... It's very much like a bad boarding school environment. And they're also putting on... it's a recital for the Magic Flute, his favorite opera, dad's favorite opera. He wants to play the part of Prince Tamino. Everyone sort of laughs and says, you're too weird and pop and you'll never be good
you
enough.
You do that weird thing with your hands.
Yeah, you do the weird thing with your hands.
And you're like Andre Bocelli.
Yeah.
You fake opera boy.
His ambition is to get this part. Very importantly, that I forgot to mention earlier, Tim's dad gave him a book of the Magic Flute?
A copy of the score, I think.
A copy of the score, like an old
like a leather-bound, very classy-looking one. It's like, I took this from the school 30 years ago. Maybe bring it back? Like,
yeah.
Wow, Dad.
It belongs to the school. So he's got this book that belongs to the school of the Magic Flute. When he's sleeping on his first night, three actual spirit will-o-wisps show up and are like, come to the library. And they go to the library and they make him put the book in the thing.
At three in the morning.
Yes. And the clock tower of this is sort of a weird interior grandfather clock. Mm-hmm. Opens up and
spins around and sucks him in.
Into sort of a nether realm, and they say, we can help you get your greatest wish. And he just assumes that that is to get the part of Prince Tamino. But they say that you have to go into this magical world and you have to
yes and everything. You have to do the opera as written,
as Prince
and you have to like accomplish everything that Tamino does in the opera. And if you don't do that, you will not get your wish and your fate is tied to this world.
Yes.
Which I guess means that he could die,
Or he'll just be stuck in that world.
Right. And Tim, for whatever reason, is like, sounds great.
Well, to be fair, they're like, do you understand? And he's like,
I don't know that I do. Yeah.
And they're like, well, you gotta decide. And he's like, sure. And then he just sort of nods and he's there. So he's suddenly in magical
Flute land,
the Flutiverse.
Yes.
And it's a desert and there's a big giant snake and he starts singing out of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I want to point out,
a musical.
Yes, this is 20 minutes into the movie. Yes. And then all of a sudden he's just like, oh no, a snake. It's a big snake. Have mercy on me, snake. And it's just like, wow, that really comes out of nowhere, huh?
Even though you know that this is like sort of a movie about the opera, it really takes you aback the first time.
I gotta tell you something. I know that I'm looking at this from the perspective of a musical, not an opera. It's insane to have 20 minutes go by where no one sings, then all of a sudden someone's like, oh no, have mercy on me. It's like, this is how we're starting now. This is what takes you into the world.
It's a weird starting point, too. I don't know if that's how the opera starts with that song.
Right,
but it's a weird starting point. And what's confusing is that he should understand the world of the opera because he knows the opera.
Right, it is by his own, like, he says it is his favorite opera.
But he acts very credulous and gullible about everything that happens. Like, he sort of is tricked into thinking that Papageno killed the monster.
Right.
Which he should know was not true.
Right.
And he seems like to, like, go along with the Queen of the Night thing. And at this point, I can't tell, is he acting really good?
Right.
Or is he
literally just clueless?
Forget that the Queen of the Night's the bad one?
Right.
Whatever it is. The idea is he's supposed to go in this opera world, like, sort of at night for, like, you know, instead of sleeping, presumably.
yeah, this twink is on, like, 3 hours of sleep.
For, like, 8 hours. Yeah. And live out the opera, and then he gets sort of poofs back into the real world, and some boarding school drama plays out in the real world, where he's got this roommate who's got an ex-roommate who left the school, quote-unquote, and that turns out to be suicide.
Right.
Both that roommate and also the roommate that is no longer with us. We're bullied, and there's just kind of general a toxic environment at the school overall. There's one of the sort of bullies is the son of like a very famous opera singer, and they're like, you're gonna be just like your dad, and he's like, but I want to be a drummer.
And I also just love that when asked eventually, sorry, but like, why are you being such a dick to people? And he's like, I guess it's what's expected of me. And it's like, I've never heard that defense before. I'm only a bully because people expect me to be a bully.
I read the script,
you know,
and it says
bold.
I'm a bully.
And most importantly, at least what the movie thinks is most importantly, he meets this girl on a train.
Sophie, I believe.
Whose name is Sophie, and she's going to, I guess, the girl's side. And we're all very confused about how this is.
Right, because she says,
side.
I'm going to the same school, but, like, the girl's dormitory is, like, further apart.
In a vastly different part of
Life. And then, like, when you see him go there, he goes, like, down a mountain into the town to get to the girl's dormitory. So it's like, they're nowhere near each other, but, like, are they in classes in the same building? You never see a girl.
Even in the classroom scenes, there are no women.
Yeah.
So how is it once again?
Yeah, it's legitimately, like, it's insane that he never sees this girl anywhere in the school.
Yeah, it's baffling. But he meets this girl, they have, a connection. They're 15. They're not going to, they're 15 to 16. They're not going to stay
together. Right, they talk for 30 minutes tops.
Yeah, on a train. They fall asleep, wakes up, and she's gone. Then they meet at a chasm later on.
Yes.
One of those classic high school chasm parties.
Chasm meet cutes.
Hey, let's go meet down in the quarry.
And they meet at the school, and the dad's looking. Well, we don't know it's her dad yet.
Right, we just see F. Murray Abraham glowering.
He's glowering down at them. We're like, oh, they're interacting.
Right, they're singing
Hopefully.
I'll Be There by the Jackson 5.
How dare they!
And so there's like a sort of, I mean, it's like a really forced romance sort of subplot here. Where
I mean, it's extremely flimsy because there's no work put into it.
No.
It's just sort of like we shove them together a few times and then it's like, oh, I love her.
Yeah.
It's very perfunctory.
Now there's three of us here telling you that there's a lot of homoerotic vibes going on in this.
A lot.
And part of that's boarding school, but there is just a lot of like genuine companionship and communion happening.
Right. So there's Tim many, and his roommate Paolo.
So yeah. many shared and held like gazes and glances. Yes.
Yep.
So much. I was gonna open my heart to you, and then you walked out.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Paolo's like, I was going to like spill my soul to you, and then you left, and now I'm mad at you. And so you have a lot of discussions between them at night, like in their pajamas in bed. You have a discussion that, like, you had pointed out, Lee, also, you got vibes from where Paolo yeah. and the bully are, like, sitting in front of a fireplace,
yep.
having a heart-to-heart where they're sort yep. of both bearing their souls, being like, boy, I'm miserable here. I don't really want to be a singer.
Yeah, yeah.
Paolo being like, you made my life miserable. My former friend died and everyone is being a jerk to me because of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you really feel like the two of them are just going to kiss at one
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
And like, this is not, I don't think this is me reading this shit into it because like, I know I'm gay and therefore want to see gay shit. I don't think that this is just me.
Paolo has very evident palpable chemistry, both with the bully, whose name I forgot.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And Tim. And Tim. To the point where when Tim is leaning in to kiss Sophie, I'm like, I'm getting nothing. This,
right.
This yeah. just feels like you're doing it because it's time. There are so many points in Paolo's interactions with both of those yeah. men, boys, whatever, where I'm like, is this going somewhere?
Right.
Yeah. Is this actually happening?
Yeah, Paolo also mentioned something about the former roommate who passed away where he says something like, we were two of a kind, brothers in arms. And it's like, okay, so you're saying...
Didn't you say like he was
gay.
Like me or something?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he does say something like he was just like me. And so it's like, which means...
So listen, grain of salt, we're three people who are all in our own ways very much in the queer community.
Yes.
Yes.
But we're all seeing it.
Yeah.
But the movie demands that there be a love plot here because then it turns out that the like, reason he has to go into the magic flute world is to learn that it's about true love or
right.
love. And what is love?
That love is important.
Love is important and like...
You can't run out on people, I guess, is what, like,
I
part
guess,
of it is,
I
maybe?
I don't really know. But at the end of the... He's in Fluteland and the world's sort of about to fall apart and
right.
she's like... The world's ending. We're all gonna die. And what who's in your heart? And he has to say Sophie,
uh-huh.
which is the name of the girl in the real
right.
world. And then it's all
he says Sophie, and then it just ends, and it's
yeah.
like everything's good now.
They're like
you
drowning in the ocean.
Right.
He says Sophie, and then there's like a burst of light, and they're fine.
Yeah.
So apparently, he learned that he needs to go run to the train station and get Sophie from
right.
stop from her. From
right. Because Sophie is about to leave because F. Murray Abraham is apparently being pissy.
Yep.
She says that it's not really his fault, but she's going to leave because Twink Academy makes everyone miserable. And it's
yep.
like, yeah, girl, it does.
Yeah, it does.
They are all fucking miserable here. But then at the end, she's like, just kidding. I guess I am going to stay since you sort of like fessed
because
up
you
how
came,
you feel about
yeah,
me.
Yeah, to the train station.
Right.
Come get me or whatever.
And can we just add Twink Academy to the list of prospective dating sims we're going to
I would play
Academy.
So much. Also, like you had said earlier, Lee, they are doing a recital of the Magic Flute for
yeah.
Christmas. I think
yeah.
it is. Tim really wants to play Prince Domino, like you had said. He does not get the part. F. Murray Abraham like yells at him, is like, "You
yeah.
fucking suck.
You're never gonna
you
get
sing
it.
Conte Partiro at Jackson 5. I fucking hate that shit. Boo." Instead, Bully is going to play Prince Domino, and so then at the end of the movie, they are going to the recital where Bully is supposed to play
yeah,
Prince Domino, and Paolo, the roommate, calls Tim backstage and is like, actually, Bully doesn't want to play Prince Domino. He's going to have a hard heart with his dad about how he doesn't want to sing and wants
mm-hmm.
to be a drummer instead. So you have to step in and be Prince Domino in the recital too. And F. Murray Abraham shows him like, this is very unorthodox, blah, blah, blah. And everyone's like, guy, fucking let it go. And he's just like, okay,
Sophie,
fine.
Doesn't she like, you need to let this happen?
You need to
yeah.
let, I think he just says like, you need to let things change or something.
Yeah.
Which like, again, you feel like, are they trying to show that F. Murray Abraham is too rigid and that's what his character has to learn? But,
know.
Like, he doesn't. And so then we just see literally the end of the movie is Tim running on stage to play Tamino. The audience claps and we fade to black.
Yeah.
So you never see him actually play this role, which he has had no actual preparation to play.
But he did. He just sang the whole thing.
Well, he sang 25% of it in the fantasy world.
He sang about...
Again, he doesn't know the blocking, the staging.
Yeah.
He lived... As Tamino.
That's true. I inhabited the role of Tamino.
He had a whole world. He has now like 20 feet of stage to do the same
yes,
amount of work.
That's right. When the serpent shows up,
yeah.
he's going to be very underwhelmed.
Yep.
So
anyway,
that is pretty much
plot.
The magic flute.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. Is it
yeah.
a lot? It's a fucking lot.
It is a fucking lot. This
I
is
think the movie's pretty shorter than the opera. And the movie's
oh, yeah.
doing double time.
Yeah, the movie's cramming twice as much in as the opera is.
And it does hustle pretty quickly through a lot of these.
Yeah, the movie is, it is 2 hours long and it feels 2 hours long, but the movie is aggressively like sprinting to the finish line once it kicks off, really,
yeah.
just because there is so fucking much that it has to cram into this.
It's fucking audacious of the movie to have not only a real, like, I'm framing narrative, but mm-hmm. for me to get invested in Paolo's thing,
yes. I know,
Bully's thing,
yes,
and all Sophie, I gotta go to who, all these people,
you can't just focus on the opera because you have to jump back and then focus on the boarding school antics,
yeah,
to the point that the opera stuff feels kind of like an afterthought, yeah. even where, like, you come back at one point and the plot of the opera has progressed without Tim yeah. there, where Tim's like, hey, where's Papageno? And the spirit shows up, he's like, you disappeared, so he decided to carry on the plot forward for you for a while. It's like, so you're telling me that the protagonist doesn't need to actually be around for the plot to roll.
Listen, they reset the world. It's like, they kicked right. it off again, right?
Yeah. Back to one? Yes. Back to one. And also, I felt like none of the subplots we get in boarding school world, they don't underpin or have any even thematic connection to what we're getting in flute world.
No.
So it tends to just feel overstuffed. I think if maybe those subplots had any thematic resonance with the opera.
Well, right. I mean, I think the director thinks that there is something there. I think the director thinks that it's about
love.
Right.
And that is the magic flute is weird. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But the one thing that I think we can all agree on is that it ultimately is a guy winning a girl's love.
Yes.
That is what happens in the play.
Yeah.
So if you can boil down anything, you could take that message away pretty easily.
Right. A boy undergoes trials to win the love,
of a girl. And yes. if you want to read more into it, there's a buffet of shit there for you.
Right. Like, there's a lot of Freemason nonsense
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
trials of, like, enlightenment.
Right.
There's a lot of shit.
The trial, fire, and
water. Yeah. Ignorance. All that shit's there.
There's
so,
a
like,
lot of symbolism and stuff.
Right.
And a lot of people have said a lot of things about it,
right.
and no one agrees on
yes.
which of those things
yes.
is right.
I don't think it helps that, right, historically, the opera itself is sort of infamous for having a nonsense gobbledygook book, right? Like,
the
story
yeah.
itself doesn't make no sense.
But, I mean, I would put it to you, this is, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, I don't know anything about opera, but
mm-hmm.
I would put it to you that these are people who primarily are interested in music.
Yes.
Yeah,
maybe narrative's not their strong suit.
Right, so right. So
maybe we're reading a little too much into
it. We've
yeah.
talked about this a little bit because, like, none of us are opera people
nope.
by nature.
Yeah.
I have never seen an actual opera, and I have no desire to see an actual opera. But yes, Lee, I think, like you said, a big part of it is the people who are creating operas, a big chunk of it is they're doing it because they have a love of the human voice as an instrument. So
yeah.
it's more focusing on what exciting, interesting things can you make a person sing versus what sort of dramatic pathos can you bring to
right,
the story.
Right.
Which is why I think a lot of times, even with operas, if they're sung in foreign tongues, you're not getting, like, the super titles on stage are not giving you, like, a line-by-line translation of what's saying. It's like, she's mad because of this now. And it's just like, that's all you get. And so you are getting it, the story from the music, perhaps. You're getting
yeah.
it from some of the acting, even though opera singers, by and large, tend to not be great actors. A lot of them tend to be singers foremost and then, like, actors second, I think,
yeah.
for a lot of them. I don't think that's a hot take to say. But yeah, so my take has always kind of been that opera is nonsense and I don't care for it. I think a lot of that is just because I like story and I like lyrics and I like to know what people are saying and how it relates to the situation. There were so many times when watching this, and this to also be clear, this uses, like I said, maybe 25%. That's my estimation
yeah.
of the opera score.
It is also, by the way, the English translation,
yes.
which a lot of that was also a very reflected very badly in the opera community on Reddit.
I'm sure. Again, I'm sure
like,
it does.
LOL.
Yeah. Right. I'm sure. Yeah, that there are a lot of thoughts about
yeah.
the English translation.
Whether they prefer the original German,
I'm sure. I suspect most opera fans probably prefer it to be sung in the language it was written in, because again, you're not focusing so much on the plot or the lyrics, you're focusing on the performer
right.
saying.
Also, I mean, can you, like, the idea, not in any normal song or poetry, having it be translated and still follow the same cadence and rhythm and
it's
rhyme,
hard.
Rhyme if it
yes,
needs to.
Yes, extremely difficult.
It's hard enough. And then I imagine that's even harder in opera, which is just kind of just some little wacky vamping and, like,
yes.
Especially if opera is meant to be more vibes.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, one of my big takeaways, I think, when watching this is, for a lot of the songs that you get in this, and again, it's hard to sort of, like, point a finger at this and say, like, the magic flute is like this because this is only, again, a little bit of the magic flute that you're getting here. But there are so many times when a character is singing a song and they're just sort of driving home the same point over and over
mm-hmm.
again. Monsantos is, like, looking at Princess Sunshine in her bed and being like, I want to kiss her, but I won't. I want to kiss her, but I won't. I want to kiss her. I want to hug her. I want to kiss her. I want to kiss her. It's like, this is going for 90 seconds. Just him being like, I want to smooch her. I want to smooch her. It's like, I get it. You fucking want to kiss her. Move on. Yeah. And this is like so many like songs that are just a character like repeating the same thing over and over. Like when he shows up, when he corners the three of them in the marketplace, he's just like, I was right behind you and I caught you. I'm behind you and I caught you. Now I've caught you and you're here and now I've caught you. I get it.
We're just talking about that whole ass song.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
That's how we end on that.
Yes, the
so
finale
niche.
Number is Papageno and his wife.
Papagena.
Mama, yeah, I was going to say Mama Gena.
Mama Gena.
his like magic wife, who Prince or Sorcerer Sarastro. Sarastro. Is like, the gods have found a perfect wife for you. Her name is Papageno. She's just like you, but a woman. And he's like, great, that's all I ever wanted.
We gotta say, he says the name like, in sight unseen, his face lights up.
As soon as he hears that her name is like his but feminine, he's like, she's perfect for me. And so then at the end of the movie, she pops up disguised as an old woman for some reason and is like, I'm an old crone, will you marry me? And he's like, fine, I guess so. And then surprise, she's hot. So then the last song of the movie is the two of them, while someone, a character is getting coronated, they just run up in front of them and they're like, Papageno, Papageno, Papageno. It's just them singing for 2 minutes about like how they're going to have a lot of fucking kids and they're just going to be so great and their name is Papageno and Papageno.
What was the part what was the way you put it? It's like they just suddenly singing, we're going to fuck, we're going to fuck.
Yeah, it's just being like, yeah, we're going to fuck, we're going to fuck, we're going to fuck.
It's like pointing out, it's like getting engaged to someone else's wedding.
Yeah, right, yeah, right. Like, again, this girl is trying to get coordinated here, and you two idiots just jump up in front, like, we're gonna fuck, we're gonna fuck, we're gonna fuck,
like,
we're gonna fuck.
Sarastro Pamina and Tim / Tamino are standing up on this, like, grand.
Right, and there's,
staircase.
Like, an audience staring at them, and like, I just can't imagine, like being in, like, the swearing in of a president, and all of a sudden, like, the president's dumbass friend shows up and is like, gonna fuck, gonna fuck, gonna fuck.
Well, I need to hear, like, the Drishler translation of the magic flute. Where they're just like, we're gonna fuck,
we're gonna fuck, we're gonna fuck, we're gonna fuck. We're gonna fuck.
Because
just all of your
there's
like,
a lot of that with like the three witch ladies, right? Where they're like,
well, yeah, there's a lot of there is a lot of horniness in the opera.
It is, yes.
Said.
Which
there's,
I get, that comes up a lot in operas.
Yeah,
a lot of
up.
Women are like, ooh, this 15-year-old.
Right, this
but
twink.
Also the monster guy is like, the, you know, the sort of character that you're supposed to hate, the weird freak monster guy.
Monsantos,
who, like, it must be said, was probably written for a more.
No, I mean, he was. He is described as a black
but
Moor.
In this one, is just like a guy with
a weird
eye.
Yeah, a weird, gross white guy.
Kind of a weird, gross, pasty white guy with a fucked up eye.
Yeah. He's like a milky eye. And
he's like some scars and shit.
In one of the rare moments of whatever nonsense they were trying aesthetically in this movie, I liked that weird little, like, it looked like it was a helmet visor, but it was just going across the, like, top of his hairline.
Yeah.
I just thought that was neat.
There's some good headgear work in this movie, I have to say. That's where the movie really shines. Hats.
But no, I mean, what are we talking about at this point? We're talking about the opera? I'm done talking about the opera.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only thing I really want to say about it real quick, briefly, and this, I think, is also just sort of related to how this movie chooses to adapt the opera. Again, I don't know the opera. I cannot comment on what the opera does or does not do successfully. I can only comment on what the movie does successfully. It must trim out so much to the point that the plot is near incoherent, where it really feels like you are just reading a Wikipedia summary of the magic flute. Because, like, as we said previously, Chris, when you said when you were talking about the opera, the premise is that Tamino shows up, meets the Queen of the Night, and she's like, this guy has kidnapped my daughter.
Go
sucks for
her.
Me. Please go save her.
Yeah.
He shows up. The guy's like, no, no, no. I'm the good one, actually. I kidnapped the daughter to get her away from her horrible mother. And Tamino's like, oh, okay. I was duped, basically. None of this happens in the movie. He just sort of shows. I think as I was watching this movie, I was under the impression, as you were supposed to be, that Sarastro is bad at first.
Yeah.
The first thing you see when you see the princess is... is Monsanto being a gross, weird lecher, like, you know, tying
and
her down to a bed, chaining her to a bed and being like, ooh, you're so hot.
I'm
going to
torture you.
Right, you're hot and I'm going to torture you. Ugh. And then even when Sarastro shows up, it's like, you could put this guy in chains immediately. Like, why did you leave your gross, lechy servant to watch. Like, to me, that's questionable judgment is what I'd say. Maybe there's a reason. And I know also that, like, if you look back at Shakespearean stuff, there's a long history of noble figures having shitty servants who are like gross weirdos who like to do their own shit. I mean, even we had said Caliban is kind of that too, even though Caliban's a much more different character than Monsanto's is.
But there is a connection in that they were both visioned by the original writers to be black men. And it isn't, I don't think it's coincidental that they're both very sexually aggressive.
Yes. Yes.
But also, why is this enlightened king? Why does he have a servant?
Right.
Like
yeah. Yeah. Why does he have a servant who he keeps threatening to like hit all the time too? Yeah. Like, so you are like, it literally feels like the rug is pulled out from under me as I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, you're the good guy. But like, why do you have this shitty servant who is like tying this princess up in chains? Like, if you are the good guy, why are you not just kind of like hanging with her all day long trying to like explain yourself to her? And again, also, we are then supposed to find out at that point that the Queen of the Night is actually bad and that Sarastro is good. This is not a conversation that happens. Sarastro literally just shows up and is like, hey, sorry about like all this shit, princess. Now you two are going to undergo this test for some reason. And it's just like, I don't know why we're doing this. There's no realization from the characters being like, oh, what we thought was wrong and what we're supposed to do now is actually better and will help us.
I hadn't considered that because I read the full Wikipedia entry for the Magic Flute before I watched the movie.
That you were probably right to.
Because, yeah, I agree. Like, I didn't know that it was going to be that necessary, but I agree. Like, I didn't occur to me that, yeah, like, you're missing a lot of context if you've never seen the Magic Flute. And to go into, as somebody who's never seen the opera, you're really shit out of luck.
No, I cannot imagine watching this movie with no context for what the Magic Flute is and you walking away being like, I get it now. I get why people like the Magic Flute so much. There's also, I guess, something, Maude, I kind of want to bring up about the music that I always kind of find a little weird about opera. And I don't want to say it's the music sounds samey to me necessarily. I don't really think that's it. But maybe this is just me looking at it from a modern perspective where you have certain things like the Queen of the Night's aria in...
which is very distinct.
Right, which is very... Like, everyone knows the Queen of the Night aria. Even if you don't think you know it just because you've heard that sort of, like, ornamental trilling part. Yeah, that part.
Yeah.
Listening to her sing the ornamental trillings is one of those things where I'm like, this is not a song sung by an evil character. Do you know what I mean? And like, again, I'm fully willing to admit that this is my modern perspective thinking like, this is what a villain song sounds like being sung by that. It doesn't sound like that to me. So it's just very strange to me that it's this character who is ostensibly like all evil and ignorance in the world sitting there going like, it's like, I get it. It's impressive to hear and it sounds neat. And maybe if I knew more about who this person was as a character, maybe they are sort of like a very kind of like ornamental, like, you know, over the top kind of exaggerated villain. Maybe I could look at this and be like, oh, I get it.
Maybe it's the upper version of like dormaniacal laughter.
Right, yes,
that's true. Yeah, I mean, I'm fully also willing to admit that these are just operatic conventions that I'm unaware of.
If that were the case, though, I will say, it does seem weird that she does go into this really beautiful bird-like trilling, and then in between those she's like, my heart burns with the fire in hell, and
kill
I'm
him,
so
kill
angry
him, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him.
Yeah, my love for you is dead if you
don't kill him.
Right, yeah, you're like, you will be cursed, gods of vengeance, I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Swoop down.
So yeah, not a nice woman.
Yeah.
I really need to talk about the point of this movie.
So
the framing narrative is ostensibly, I mean, really, it's not a framing narrative. Really, like the opera, I don't really know how to describe it, but basically, this type of narrative is meant to be like, oh, he has to learn something.
All you need is love.
From this other world.
Right.
But there's, this kid's got like 20 problems. And I don't think, like, not.
I'd love 8-1.
Not having a girlfriend was not highest on the list by far.
Yes.
And I don't understand if that, like, that why they chose that to be the
point. I do not either. Like, you can certainly argue, I think, that the point of the opera is, like, love is important.
Yeah.
I do not get that from Timothy Chalamet minus's character at all. There's almost a subplot where he, like, tends to, like, run out on people, which feels like it could be something, but it's never quite something enough. And that, frankly, that feels like that could matter. Like, what if his dad was dying and he was like, but I've got to go to Mozart school. Sorry, dad. And his dad's like, oh. Okay, and then, like, you know, as he's going, his father dies, but he's like, gotta go to Mozart school.
But the opposite is true, which is crazy,
right?
Because dad's like, he's like, no, he won't go. He's like, no, go. We've already talked it over with your mom, who we don't see, which I think is weird.
It is a little weird.
But it's strange, though, because that's clearly somewhat of a motivation for him, but by the time we get to the end of the movie, does it matter?
Right.
Does it matter that his dad is dead?
I don't know. I mean, I think it does. Again.
I mean...
Does it matter as much as I love
the movie
Sophie?
Doesn't have time.
Right.
Thing, but
and I mean, is this a story about a boy who is, like, closing his heart off to love because he has lost someone important to him? Like, that could be it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it is that.
No.
Every single character who is close to him seems to show up at some point and is like, hey, you're always fucking, like, stepping out on me. But, like, we barely get anything of him with these characters. So that, like, yes, we do get a scene where, like, his roommate's about to be like, boy, let me tell you about my dead best friend. And Tim's like, well, got a split. Sorry,
yeah.
Sorry, son.
Here's my best theory for what happened with the direction of this movie is that somebody, whoever made this movie, wrote it, envisioned it. Number one, they really loved the magic flute.
Yes.
And they wanted to do something with the magic flute.
Yes.
Number two, they wanted it to be connected to the magic flute, this framing narrative, and the magic flute makes no sense. And so the closest thing they could come up with was, well, I guess it's about love. And they also, like, opera writers, not knowing much about narrative,
mm-hmm.
took the most facile route possible and
yes.
say he needs a girlfriend by the end of the movie.
Yes.
And that is how you end up with this plot.
I think you're right.
But at some point, somebody with some more narrative sense gave this character much more compelling baggage to deal
yes.
with. And then that's just not really gotten into
I mean, right. I mean, there's like a Whitman sampler of plot points that gets dropped into his lap. Any one of these could be a focus.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you just sort of throw the candies up and like, I don't know, love,
it's,
I guess.
It's all of them.
Yeah. So I do have a little bit. I will just like do a little bit here. There's very, as like, you may be shocked to know, there's very little information about this movie out there online. And the most that I found is a couple of interviews the director gave with various websites, like over Zoom and shit. So I watched a couple of YouTube videos with the director. Florian Sigal again. So he says, I thought maybe we needed a little framing story to lead the audience in and give them something that they're familiar with so they don't smell the opera from the very first moment. The younger generation really has trouble understanding how all that works. How do you get a ticket for an opera? How do you dress if you... Which I love that's his first thing. How do tickets work?
That's not a concept
Gen Z.
Today don't know.
Yeah, what's Ticketmaster? How do you dress if you go to a classical concert?
Nope.
When do you clap? When are you allowed to clap? And, like, I
by
do get
way,
that.
By the way, none of that's an issue in your film, sir.
No, I do. I, yes. I was looking for the parts.
I didn't learn any of that.
No, I did not. I certainly didn't learn when to clap while watching this. I was looking for the parts where the arias continue the story or give us more info or background info on a certain character. I wanted to avoid the parts that are cliche opera. So the first thing I did was take all the recitativo, because I thought, okay, that's something people who have no relation to classical music don't understand, which is probably true. As I said before, like, the recitative is the parts where a character just sort of, like,
sure.
says through song, like, I'm walking down the street, oh, look at that dog.
The stairs.
Yes, now I sneak.
Oh, my door is
sneak, yes, oh no, what will I do? And so, like, I do admit that is probably a big hurdle for a lot of audience members to get over. And he also says, the middle part that mainly has to do with the spiritual approach of the Freemasonry was shortened, and I interpret more as a coming-of-age story, about finding your position in society, not necessarily the whole initiation into the Freemason society. Now, from what I'm gathered from just sort of listening to him talk and reading other things, it basically feels like he is kind of focusing on both, like we said, love, like the concept of love overcoming all, and the idea of what your position is in society, because he brings that up a lot in the interviews.
Yeah.
And he translates what your position is in society into coming of age, which you can do, but it's not like, I don't know that I would
they're
say
not
it's
one
like,
in the same.
Right, yes, I agree with that. I think like coming of age is almost like a third, you know, Freemasons love that number three. That's almost like a third thing you could throw in here.
Yeah.
And there is also a throwaway thing I wanted to mention real quick, where he just says something about how the Queen of Night doesn't feel too evil by design because likable villains are more fun to watch.
Huh?
I don't think she's likable because I don't know shit about her.
I also
her.
Don't think she's detestable either because, like you said, we don't know anything.
Right. No, I mean, that's, yeah. So, like, I think it's insane to, like, look at this character and be like, oh, she's likable or interesting or I understand her motives because I have no fucking clue what her motives are except Knight all the time.
I don't really know what's so bad about her.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
right.
she was creating the Eternal Knight, which
I get like Eternal anything.
No, people treated
yeah.
that like that was a problem.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, Eternal anything, I guess, is bad. But like again, a little bit of what her whole deal is, what she's trying to do here, might go a long way.
The problem is, right, in Fluteverse, no one's motivations are clear. It's all of this weird, random, nothing world that shit just happens. And I think especially when the plot is still going on when we're not there,
yeah,
only adds to our distance from any any emotionality right. in that
and
story.
I think again the fact that one like the main character is literally thrown into this world and a ghost tells him you must yes and everything that happens to you just removes any kind of potential for
agency
agency from him whatsoever.
Yeah,
so like
it's also just so bizarre the situation where he comes and goes and he fully is aware that he's in a narrative.
Yes,
because we're talking about that bit like he just has had like a nice moment with Sophie the real girl that mm-hmm. he has a crush on allegedly.
Yes,
and then the next day, he's back doing the trials of whatever in Sarastro's
place. Right, he has to
place.
Be silent.
He's being silent, and there's this big part of the opera where, you know, Pimina comes down, and she's like, oh, I want to talk to you. I need emotional assistance.
Right, I'm so sad.
And he is not allowed to respond, but she doesn't understand why, because she doesn't know about the vow of silence,
right.
which is silly, as
yes.
you point out. But, and then I had this moment of, like, what's going through his mind right now?
Right.
Because, like, number one, he doesn't even like this girl. But, like,
right.
what must it do to a person? Like, you're not acting as this person. There's a real woman who
right.
allegedly is saying she's in love
right.
with you.
You are living as this as, like, this character.
Yeah.
A woman is saying, I'm so in love with you, and you're not talking to me. I'm going to kill myself because I don't know how to, like, deal with the fact
yeah.
that you don't seem to love me. And you're thinking, I don't know who this person is,
yeah.
but, like, nonetheless, you can't let her kill herself. Like, it's just, like, this is, like, such an insane character thing
yeah.
to not deal with.
And you had pointed this out well before we did on camera, but it's, like, there's a version of this where the Fluidiverse is a reflection of our world.
Right, where it's, like, a Wizard of Oz thing. Is
yeah,
what
and Pimina could have been Sophie, and it would
yes.
maybe
and, like, F. Murray Abraham is Sarastro or something
yeah.
like that. Like, you would make his character less of an obnoxious
what,
asshole.
Mr. Baumgartner.
Or what if,
yes,
what if
that, yeah, Baumgartner,
what if
actually.
What if Night threw the veil off and it was
F. Murray Abraham? That would be good.
Hello!
He would be F. Murray. I just want him in drag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, it's what we all want, Lee.
It's what America
we all
wants.
Want F. Murray Abraham to do a drag performance.
The F stands
yeah.
for femme.
But yeah, it's a crazy conceit. The way that he goes in and out, and he has to, like, sort of be responsible for this world
yeah.
and the attachments that his character's forming, even though he's not sticking around. It's such a bizarre thing.
Yeah. And I also like Paolo Papageno, right? It's perfect.
Yep.
It's right there. Could have been one and the same. But nope, they are not.
I mean, should we get into a little bit of the... Before we get into, like, the we'll talk about the performances, but the sort of styles, aesthetics, and the visuals, which are really hit or miss.
Yes,
yeah.
I quite agree with that.
So, like I said, I think the only thing I liked visually was...
Twink Academy?
Oh, that I love conceptually.
Oh, me too, honey.
And Twink Academy did have some cool interiors, but Twink Academy also looked like it was shot in a like a museum that they redressed, just because there's so many display cases in like every
right.
fucking
you're
shot.
Right. A lot of like
yeah.
busts and statues and sculptures.
And I'm not saying that's not in university, but come on.
Mm-hmm. That library looked crazy, though.
It
yeah,
really
that
did
look crazy.
I liked Monistato's weird visor thing, but that's
yes.
kind of it. Like,
I like the Lady of Night was good.
Yeah, the Queen of the Night, I think she has she's a great hat. She's got a new hat. She has a great CGI robe that, like,
yeah.
whenever she's, like, doing her arias, her robe just, like, tendrils out around her.
Yeah.
And she, like, starts, like, swaying back and forth like she's on a platform or something. And so, like, if nothing else, those are the moments where I'm like, okay, it's visually interesting to me. Even though you're doing a song that's just a character, like, singing something, at least you're making it visually interesting by having this character sort of, like, glide around the
right.
set and have their robe, like, fly off in a weird way. And then when she disappears at the end, the robe, like, sucks into itself and, like, whisks her away. And it's like,
yeah.
oh, okay. This is interesting looking. Like, I like what you're doing here with this. But then you have her three handmaids, or whoever the fuck they are, who
terrible
show up at the beginning.
Looking.
Right. Who, yeah, who have awful costumes. Costumes that, like, don't fit or flatter any of them at all, regardless of body shape. Like,
the
they all just look bad.
Is,
yeah.
Is, I put a, like, it's, to me, it gave me a Harajuku vibe.
Yes. Yes.
They have, like,
oh my
gold.
Goodness.
They have gold
eyebrows.
Yeah, it's like,
and, like,
it literally looks like.
On the
right.
Face.
It looks like that edible gold flake. Someone just
yeah.
slapped it
so
on their brows.
It really felt, their looks especially, but most, I'm going to say most of the makeup and costume looks in the Flutiverse looked like student projects.
They look cheap.
And
yeah.
they look cheap. They look like student projects. They look like ideas that were not given enough time to develop. It looks like there was no, like, there was no, I don't know what you would call it, stylist, director, whatever. There was no one doing the much-needed editing or the much-needed, like, okay, we've got to
yeah,
like, bring
yeah.
the quality
yeah,
level up
right,
here.
Right, right.
Yeah, like, the orange foreheads with the metallic eyebrows, like, what?
Bad
I also,
haircuts.
The,
yeah,
yeah,
a lot of bad haircuts.
Sort of blunt, high bangs.
Like, baby bangs.
Yeah.
Yes. Princess Pamina has like a bit of fettuccine stuck to her chin the entire movie, which is super weird.
Crazy. I didn't even really notice it that much until you pointed it out. I couldn't see anything else.
I just don't understand what it is. Like, what is this thing on her chin? Okay. I just want another character to like reach over and be like, I'm sorry, this is bugging me so bad.
The thing is, like, I don't even think the issue here is that it is strange or it's not recognizable to us. I understand that that was one of the small things they were trying to do to sell the idea that this is a wacky dream world, right? But it still just doesn't look like, it just looks like you just put a strip of, you just stuck a strip of something on her
chin. Because that's
the
only adornment on her face.
Right. I mean, she has a nose ring. And then at the end of the movie, you see that she has this like little like chain thing going from her ear to her nose ring. And I'm like, oh, that's cool looking. Why isn't she wearing this the entire movie? Like, why isn't she have this little bit of like interesting business going on with her face for the rest of the movie? And I don't know why.
I will say, I want Papageno's blazer.
Yes.
Yep. It's a nice blazer.
What about his feathered collar?
That's the thing. It has to come with the collar. He's got this nice sort of feather, like sort of cowl almost, mm-hmm. and
it
like
is,
a nice blue jacket.
It is kind of interesting because I told you guys earlier, when Papageno shows up in the opera, he is like dressed like a birdman for some reason. Like, he has feathers all over him to the point that Tamino is not sure if he's human or not. And it's sort of interesting, and I don't know if this is like a budgetary concern or a visual concern, that the most bird-like he gets is that he has some feathers slapped around his neck. And I do think it's a neat looking jacket, but it does feel like it's one of those things where like you really needed someone in costumes to like plus this up a little bit. Yeah. Like, you needed someone to, like, really push this to the
nth
degree.
He's got a bit of that Robin Hood syndrome. Yes. Like, you could have put that at H&M.
Yes, yes, yes. It is very much like the H&M Robin Hood.
It just feels like, with very few exceptions, the costumes had no unifying idea or look or design to them. The exception being Papageno and Papagena both have great
fits. Yeah, they both look great.
Great fits. I loved Papagena's, like, yellow robe
poncho
and then like the
thing.
Floral kind of billowy
palazzo pants.
Yeah. Yes, oh my god, she looked fantastic.
Yeah, she did. And again,
looks,
like I said,
fantastic and cozy as hell.
Yeah, and sensible. Yes.
Yeah.
It's really great when you're doing your dumb little Papagena dance to have such sensible pants on.
She's ready to hit the garden after this.
She's got her little trowel.
Yeah.
And I would say that I kind of like Sarastro's robe. I think his robe is kind of neat looking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, aside from that. And I mean, also, we didn't really talk about the, like, location or, like, the sets in this movie as much.
It's
but
very
deserty. Right. We were talking about, like, how weird it is when you open in Flute World, they're in a desert.
Yeah.
And this is not, like, an exotic Middle Eastern-y looking desert. This looks like Arizona
or something.
I think
it might be Egypt, depending on, because we do see a lot of Egyptian stuff.
I mean, I guess it could be.
And there being a temple of the sun is also quite Egyptian.
Right.
That's a Freemason-y shit too.
Right.
Because they like that shit.
Right. They did fucking love their Egypt, the cribbing from the Egyptians.
Yeah. So,
but it could have been more visually interesting than it is. As it stands now, this looks like almost any sort of Star Trek 60s TV show set in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when you get into Sarastro's temple, it feels cheap because I assume it is cheap. Because I assume that there's not a huge budget for this. So a lot of it really does feel like you have very sort of minimal sets and that's as far as you could stretch the budget. So
mm-hmm.
like the temple looks kind of basic and boring. The Queen of the Knights temple at least looks a little interesting. Like you were saying, Lily, like it's just night sky in there. And I'm not sure if it's a room or if it's just open. You basically just see her standing on a pedestal and it's just stars and moon behind her. And it's like, at least that is like visually interesting.
Mm.
And so I don't know, maybe if the same care had been taken with Sarastro or something like that. But even then, like, with the challenges, like, the fire is just them standing on an all-seeing eye and there are flames around them and they play a flute and they go away and then the water is they fall into water and it's just like there's nothing visually exciting about any of this to me. This is all very sort of rote fantasy shit and I wish it looked more visually interesting to the point that I think Twink Academy looks more visually interesting because at least it's sort of like real and European, you know.
What major are you going to study at Twink Academy?
Bottoming. Hyper
what,
bottoms.
What about you, Lee? What are you going to study at Twink Academy?
I don't know.
Lube arts.
What?
Lube arts. Yes.
The arts.
Why does it have to be sex?
That's Twink Academy.
I feel like that's fair. Maybe you'll minor in like tiny waists.
Yeah. Yeah. Snatched waists.
and flat waist chests.
Yes. I have a minor in twink death just to know like what awaits me someday.
No, I definitely majored in twink death.
There's got to be like a minor in like a goth emo.
Yes,
oh,
right.
For sure,
yes.
For sure.
How to style your hair so like one bang is perfectly over your eye at all times.
I mean, maybe that's where you learn to do the Tamino hair we see at the very end.
Oh my God.
His little spiky anime wig that he has at
made
the
of,
end.
Like
feathers?
Yeah,
construction
right.
paper?
Right. Yes, yes. Like made of nothing like organic or natural or real whatsoever.
It is like baby's first cosplay.
Yes, it really is. Yes, it does. That would not be out of place on like PAX East.
Well. All right, do we want to talk about performances or just go straight to the fixes?
I guess we could talk a little bit about performance. I mean, the thing, like,
not
I don't think there's
say.
A whole
we're not,
lot.
We can't talk about the singing. We don't know shit about opera.
Right. I mean, like,
people's voices sound nice.
Yeah, I think, like, everyone's voice sounds pretty good. Like, you can quibble over whether they're authentic opera voices or not.
Do we
but,
think,
like,
at the risk of anchoring the Jack Wolf girlies,
yes.
do we think the kid can act?
And the Jack Wolf boys.
The boys.
Yes, he was okay. I wasn't blown away by his acting.
I mean,
he was competent.
Give all
right, I was going to say, again, is the problem him or is the problem that, again, like, there's no character
I thought
here.
He was competent. I thought he struggled at times to... I feel like he was caught, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I felt like he struggled to move out of emotional beats that weren't, like, wistful or very sincere.
You can't...
you
he's
got
to
I mean?
Deliver so many lines. I felt bad for having some of these lines he has to say, where he has to talk about, like, I'm sorry for being so flaky, or that whole monologue he does at the end,
right.
where it's like, your music, and I'm like, this is nonsense.
Right. No, right. There's so much, like, tell, don't show going on with this dialogue.
Yeah.
He has to, like, state the most obvious things because we need to wrap this shit up.
Yeah.
And so he always has to come with, like, the bluntness of a hammer and, like, say very obvious crap and deliver it sincerely, which is, I think, a very difficult ask of any actor, let alone a child.
I don't know who played Paolo, the roommate, but I thought he was, for me, I'm taking Ephraim Abraham out of the equation. He did great. He did his thing. But out of the rest of the cast, I thought he had the most, at least emotionally layered performance.
Yeah.
And he also, to arguably, had some very tough lines to deliver as well.
I think the kid playing Paolo does good work.
Mm-hmm.
I think...
I'm sorry, you mean fat Paolo?
Yeah, that fucking tub Paolo. So fucking fat and unappealing. Who would want Paolo? Also, like, I think really my MVP for the movie is... Ramsay Bolton? What's his name? Reese Ifans?
Yeah,
Ifans. I don't know.
It's not Reese Ifans.
Okay,
that's,
not Reese Ifans. That's someone
that's
else.
That's a different person.
Iwan.
Ewan. So it's like Ewan...
Ewan Ran.
So it's the same...
Ewan
okay.
Ran.
I think Ewan is very fun in this movie. It's a very different role from the only other thing I've seen him play, which is Ramsay Bolton, where he's kind of like a funny goofball in this. I think he has like a perfectly nice voice.
Mm-hmm.
He does a good job with the singing, and he brings some much needed comic relief to this like nonsense.
And like energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is Papageno's purpose, which is again why the opera's a mess, because it's like you want this big sweeping drama about love and coming of age and also a goofy guy.
Right, and also
birds.
There's a nut dressed as a bird who like fails the test, but then the gods are like, just kidding, you could have a hot wife anyway. And he's like, great. I thought he was a lot of fun in this.
Yeah.
I liked F. Murray Abraham, who I think feels pretty keyed into like what the role is asking of him. His character fucking sucks.
Yeah.
You know, he's fun to watch. He's a good enough actor.
Very
that
good
I would...
expressive face.
Yes.
Yeah.
If there were multiple points. I think I'm thinking specifically of when he's like, I guess outside the door, listening to
yes.
the quote unquote romantic piano moment happening.
Yeah.
And I just love how his face is scrunched up like, what? Joy?
His face has like Muppet-like qualities.
It does. You can see someone's hand like scrunching his face up inside.
Scrunching the face.
And
it's very flexible.
I'm now just going to imagine what the movie would have been like.
With Kermit the Frog as Longbow.
Well, oh my God, that would be amazing. But no, with F. Murray appearing as the Queen of the Night in the... That'd be amazing.
Oh my God.
I don't really know
what
who else
about?
Do I say.
No,
I mean,
can't remember.
I
no one else really
the bully doesn't have much to do. He's
no,
bad.
And like they're all like
do.
Fine, but it's like they're not playing characters. Like the woman who plays Sophie, like I like her fine, but Sophie's not a character. Like.
Nope.
Inexplicably Irish. Her dad's F. Murray Abraham and her mom lives in
London.
I don't know her mom.
Maybe her
Irish.
Mom is an Irish expat living in London now, I guess. Sure, why not?
Why not?
I mean, yeah, but like again, like the woman who plays Pamina, like you're barely on screen. You're on screen for like maybe what, like 7 minutes total of this movie.
And your job is mostly to sort of be sad and confused.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much it.
Is she in love with him? Because she...
She definitely acts like it is. And at the end, she's sort of like, I give you a pass.
Right, yeah, right.
What do you do? Like,
right. She,
like,
your hall pass.
Yeah, she basically just, like, winks at him and is like, I get it. You're not going to be sticking around. Okay, have fun.
Yeah.
And, I the woman who plays the Queen of the Night does a good job with the songs, but, like, is asked to do very little acting-wise.
Granted, she's the Queen of the Night, so it's very dark when you see her.
Yes.
But I don't know that she looks like a mother to... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like they're not that far apart in age.
They're probably not. And I guess you could just argue it's one of those things
magically.
She's eternally 30 shit like that.
Eternally 30. Is that the sequel of Forever 20?
Eternally 30.
The hellish life.
A sister shop? Yeah. Forever 20, eternally 30.
I would love that. 30. I'll go shopping
for people, 30. Like, in denial of the fact that they're aging. No! I'm eternally 30. I'm going to live forever.
Oh my god, you know what graphic tee sells like hotcakes there? Where it just says 30, flirty,
It's on the bag.
Yes, exactly.
Eternally 30, eternally flirty, eternally thriving. But I mean, like I said, though, like, just character-wise, the Queen of the Night, like, barely fucking matters as a character, because, like, she's a threat in that she's Eternal Night, but she shows up literally fucking twice in this movie and does next to nothing. She shows up a second time and is like, you gotta kill this guy. Well, and she's like, I don't want to do that. And the mom's like, well, I'm gonna split. Yeah. That's an out for me. And you never see her again.
And this is somewhat of a quibble, but it's... I mean,
Do you have somewhat of a quibble with this movie?
Added to the list of things that aren't explained, but we never pause to wonder, I'm sorry, but what does Eternal Night represent to people in Flutiverse that we need to prevent it? What does that even mean?
Right. I mean, like, is it literally just Eternal Night?
I would love for that to have been teased out.
And that people debate about that anyway. Some people are just like, I don't know. That's bad. Night's bad.
Was there...
spelled out for you?
Yeah. Hey, night bad, bro. Was there, like, a favorite song anyone had?
Yeah, I love that pa 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 shit.
Pa 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 pa.
For real though, I mean, it's probably the one I'm gonna remember the most.
Papageno. No, that was. I like that. The Queen of the Night aria being literally the only thing I knew from this score beforehand.
I actually don't mind the. It's silly and goofy, but I don't mind the "Have Mercy." It's very funny to me. The idea that, like, you're being hounded by a giant snake.
Right, by reptile. You're like, please, hey, snake.
Just sort of like, yeah.
Have compassion, snake.
Singing to, like, not die to a snake. Are you singing to the snake or to God? We don't know, but you're begging someone to have mercy with you.
When this opera is done on stage, is "I'll Be There" by Jackson 5 Tipley incorporated into it?
Yeah,
is that
so.
A choice that the, okay.
Yeah,
is so. That like the curtain
they
call
can
song?
Get the rights to it. Sometimes they have to do
okay.
"Imagine" by John Lennon. It really depends on.
What's could you imagine? Suddenly in the middle, someone gets out of the guitar and starts
crying. Sometimes it's Wonderwall.
Imagine. Oh. Yeah.
Anyway, here's Wonderwall, says Tomita.
Imagine all the papas
popping.
They gain a wife if you try.
Papa!
You may say I'm Papagino.
All right, let's get into fix it.
Okay,
yeah,
I have one last one.
Yeah, one last
what
one.
If, what? What if just in the middle it was "Smooth" by Santana featuring Rob?
Did you just imagine if, like, the desert, they open up on the desert?
Honestly, would have been a more smoother and organic way to introduce the singing concept into it.
By using the song entitled "Smooth"?
Yes.
I'm gonna get that scene. I'm gonna record it somehow. I'm gonna edit it. "Smooth" by Santana. Right as the snake's head sort of pops into frame.
Oh, Christ.
I'm gonna make a whole fan vid to that song. With no contact, and just put it on YouTube.
He'll just be there.
We'll see what the Jack's girlies think of it.
I think the only thing you should put as, you know, because you can do that little, like, basically...
A description
for the video can just be, like, by popular demand.
No comment necessary.
Good times.
All right. Ooh. Does anyone want to go first with fixes?
Yeah, I'm down to go first. So the way I approach this was, I'm not changing the plot of Magic Flute necessarily. I'm just doing something different with how the movie is, like, approaching it.
Yeah.
This movie needed more of a Wizard of Oz type thing, where you're working through something from the real world within the framework of Flute World. I think it's much easier if we don't have to have a scene of him going into the library and sticking a book in that place and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So it's just going to happen during dreams. Queen of the Night is going to be a representation of his mother, who we will meet in my version, who I think when we see her is, like, so crippled by grief. We're kind of using, like, night as a symbol for that grief, but also kind of, like, depression of this idea that the light has gone away out of her life. I want it to be that it was an open question whether or not he would still go to Mozart's Academy, but kind of fled, because I don't think that's a terrible theme. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't appear. So I want him to literally have kind of, like, fled at that moment, fled seeing his mom in this level of pain, or fled having to deal with that pain himself. So Queen of the Night will be represented by that. You know, Sarastro as being represented by F. Murray Abraham is fine. I think it would just kind of show a more, like, idealized what if this guy didn't suck version of him. I think it's just going to be he's living out the dream aspect of it, and eventually coming to share his dream experiences with his roommate. And I still want them to be doing a production of the Magic Flute, but instead of it being tied up in that weird, like, C plot that we have about the bully and I don't want to sing, who cares? Mm. Instead, because I want to make good on the gay tension that was very much in this film, it's still a boys' school, they're still doing Magic Flute, but they're going to do, like, quote-unquote classic style where, like, yeah, men are going to play women in this, okay? Mm. Wouldn't you know it? Paolo is playing Pamina in this. I also...
Are there many men who can sing the Queen of the Night arias?
Oh, that's a good...
Are they...
Good question.
Castrados? Or...
Yeah. They all have to draw short straws, and whoever has a short straw, sorry, you're going to be the castrato.
Yeah.
But I also want it to be that, like, the missing roommate, he's just missing. They don't know for certain that he has committed suicide. I think what is learned by going to Dream World is that he is trapped playing the Tamino role. And this is about...
Eternally Tamino.
Eternally Tamino. And this is about also kind of like breaking him out of Dream World. I find the idea that our main character just has to then go through all the same plot beats as the opera to be an incredibly passive and uninteresting way to tell this story.
Yeah.
I think he should be an agent of, like, resistance in chaos within the Dream World of that story. So, like, he recognizes Paolo's lost roommate and tries to save him, for example. Those are kind of, that's what I had going.
By the way, just a quick thought off of your thing. There's, like, more than one book in that area where he puts the book. Could you imagine if they're all different magic books for different magic operas?
I mean, is this like the franchise hopes
that
they had?
Opera for the Magic Fluteverse?
Yes.
Where there's, like, next we go to Carmen.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like,
one of those wacky boys that did sort of the goofy opera musical Bridges.
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, Gilbert and Sullivan.
Pirates of Penzance?
Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah, HMS Pinafore.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. I think that the framing narrative is fine. I think that it needs to make more sense of why he's doing... why they were going into the Magic Flute, rather than have him just sent sort of a facile message about, like, well, you need love, and that is in the form of a girlfriend at age 16. I think it'll just kind of be about that his dad has died, his dad is very connected to music, and maybe connected to a mutual love of music, and maybe the mom's in there too. We don't really get to see the mom, and maybe the mom can... I think the... You got a good point. I'm just going to steal that.
Go for it.
That the mom can be a good representation for the Queen of Night, since there are no other sort of authority female figures in the movie to go off of. But the idea here of, like... That he's having a hard time. So he knows that he's got to go to this music school because that was the dad's dying wish. And he did want to go in a time before his dad got sick and died. But now he's going there and he's not getting along with any of the students. And it's hard. And F. Murray Abraham's a shit teacher and doesn't really care about, you know, teaching and getting the kids enthusiastic as so much as, like, don't do weird stuff with your hands when you sing. Yeah, don't do the weird hand fists.
Don't do the Arthur Beeb with your hands.
So he's having a hard time, and I think that it comes very quickly, this, like, how... And I think you have to sort of sit with that for a bit, maybe a bit longer than 20 minutes, although I understand
maybe
we need to get into the opera
it.
World.
Yeah.
Hold space for the lyrics of Defying Gravity.
Hold my finger.
You needed a longer nail.
Yeah, I know.
But... eventually, I think that he needs to get to a point where he doesn't really understand why he's putting himself through all of this anymore. Like, is this that important? Like, I came here to, like, do good at singing and be good at singing, but, like, why? Why am I doing this? And then the opera spirits are like, we're going to help you get what you want. And he's like, what, to get the princess a mineral? And they're like, oh sure.
Sure.
But really their job is to...
Tug's wispy collar.
Yeah. Like, but really their job is to, like, reinvigorate his love of music, which he has forgotten about. And they're like, they give all the spiel, but you have to go into this thing. But I'm adding a rule that I talked about during the watching of this movie where... It doesn't make sense that you know the story when you're going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You have to think it's real, and you can't know what's going to happen. So I think he goes in as if he's just this person, like it's a dream, and he's in the story. And it's sort of a vague, maybe you have like a vague dream sense of like, this feels familiar, but I don't know why. When he wakes up the next day, he remembers what he did in the dream, and he's like, what a crazy dream. There were these three opera spirits, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, he learns... Maybe they're studying the magic flute in school, and he learns a little bit more about the magic flute, and then a couple of nights later, there's another dream, and there's that part of the play is then reacted. So it's sort of like, as the movie goes on, he gets more... Like, he continually has these dreams, and each time he enters the dream, it's like... It's like right after it's Nemo Land or Slumberland. Little Nemo.
Slumber
it's
Nemo
like
Land.
Right after the last dream ended, he's back again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's Prince Cimino again, and he doesn't remember anything else other than what just happened in Flutiverse. And he wakes up and he's like, wow, I had a sequel to that dream. I can't wait to see what happens next. So he remembers what he does in the dream. So he can take the lessons back.
Right, but his dream self
His dream self has to go alone.
Yeah, has to go commando.
Because I also have a problem with the Queen of the Night being evil and Sarastra being good. Whether or not you believe that it's like, I don't know, ignorance and knowledge or whatever, or you take this sort of enlightenment side of thing where she represents sort of obfuscation. I think it's weird and kind of like, having it be a woman and a man is a little weird to me. I don't know, I have some problems with it. And I think that rather than it being like a single-handedly like, this good always, this bad always, that it's like, I kind of want to do a little bit of a revisionist thing in the end, where maybe Sarastro is the same person as the headmaster, but the headmaster is actually a shit teacher.
Uh-huh.
He's bad at it. See, like, he represents knowledge, but his teaching is joyless and hard and harsh, and it's not enriching or whatever. And I want the Queen of the Night to represent sort of a more primal attachment to why you're doing it, like a motivating, like sort of a motive force kind of a thing, like an emotion, right?
Now, would
like,
you have her sing I'll Be There by the Jackson 5?
Yeah, yes. So, and I kind of want that to be the thing at the end where, rather than the woman who ostensibly Cimino is supposed to be in love with being like, do you just like someone else maybe? And you want to say her name and save us from this world of death? If he has to sort of remember why he's doing music and maybe reconnect to it, and maybe in the dream that's the first time he can remember the bits of the real world. He kind of remembers all of the joy that he gets or has gotten from singing and making his parents proud, or just like, you know, being with his friends goofing off and jamming one night on the piano, etc. Just like the little moments that remind him why he likes music so much. I think it should just be about that than about getting a girlfriend or anything else.
You saying that, actually, like, this is apropos of nothing because it was just sort of something that I thought of when you were talking about this.
Yeah.
Is like, it is also weird because it would be such an easy fix for this movie as is to have the magic flute be an opera that Tim is not really that knowledgeable about, but like, it's something that his dad fucking loves. And like, it's a connection that he has with his dad because he knows that his dad cares about this opera.
Yeah.
But like, that also solves the problem of him going into the magic flute world and not knowing shit about it. But like, as he's learning more about it, it's like he's connecting with his dad in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just fucking doing your work for you now, guys.
We're fixing it.
Yeah. So, but okay. So anyway, this is kind of a baffling movie to look at and figure out how to fix it, because more than many of the movies that we've done, I don't know who this movie is for. Like, I cannot imagine that if you were a fan of the Magic Flute, you would watch this movie and be like, it really captured it. It really got what, like, works about me. Right. And I imagine if you are into, like, sort of, like, teen boy movies, like, you would watch this and be like, what the fuck's the deal with all this Magic Flute shit? So, like, truly, like, who is this movie for? And so I think, like, that's kind of a big hurdle to overcome here. So... Having said that, first thought, best thought is what I usually say. And my first thought when I was watching this was literally just no magic flute world shit whatsoever. It's all gone. I don't want any of it in this movie.
Yeah.
I think you have the premise that the Twink Academy is putting on a production of the Magic Flute. Tim has just shown up there for the first time. He has lost his father, is feeling kind of alone and ungrounded and not really sure what he's doing at this school. Aside from the fact that his dad was like, Twink Academy was great for me. I loved my time there.
sorry. I loved being at Twink Academy so
I'm
much.
I'm an active member of the Twink Academy Alumni Association.
Twunk Academy. until I had to graduate to Twunk Academy. It was the saddest day of my life when they told me I was a twunk. But anyways, so after his dad has passed, he just sort of shows up there and is like, I'm not really sure why I'm doing this. I think I like music, but I'm not really clear as to like why I'm here and if it's worth all this. And he goes to Twink Academy, much like in this movie, like it kind of sucks. F. Murray Abraham is kind of a shitty headmaster. It feels like he's more focused on the fact that he has the baggage of this prestigious school and that he has a reputation to uphold versus someone who actually enjoys teaching music, the passion of it to students. So all of the students there are kind of miserable, much as they are in this movie. Their lives are being made miserable from the top down by F. Murray Abraham, who feels so burdened by the name of Mozart that he's not really even able to impart a joy unto these students anymore. And as they're putting on this production of The Magic Flute, I think you can have certain aspects of it that are reflecting things that he's going through in real life. You can also have, like we said, you know, his roommate is playing Papageno, and maybe, you know, like the bully is playing Monsanto or something. I don't know. But basically, it has to be just sort of what he is learning from all of this is why people love the magic flute. What is it that people get from this? Why is this captivating to so many people? Which it is. People love this opera. And I don't get it because it's not my thing, but that's okay. But I would like to watch a movie where someone tries to explain why this is powerful for them, why this works for them, why just hearing the beauty of the human voice doing something so insanely, you know, ornamental and over the top like the Queen of the Night aria, like why that is thrilling to just hear someone's voice like hit all those insane notes in my
book.
And
crazy.
It is. Yeah, and it is. Like, every time I hear it, I am like, wow, this is impressive. I do get it.
I mean, that's connecting, because the idea that it's, like, set in music school, it would be really cool to have scenes where it's just, like, scenes of, like, people talking about, sharing stories about the opera, but not of, like, the story and how much they like it, but how much of, like, how they saw one particular person perform this and how she did it, or how the struggle that she went through to get that.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's the thing. Like, that is kind of one of those things, like, why do you love music? And a lot of it comes down to, I saw something, or, like, my parents love something. My friend recommended this to me. I would rather see a movie about a bunch of kids at school rediscovering like why it is that they love music in the first place. And even this goes up then to like F. Murray Abraham, who realizes I am being like a monster at this point. Like I have to kind of remember the fact that like these are kids. I'm doing this because I love music, not because I'm beholden to like the school board of directors or some shit like that. The children who are wrong.
So you're basically doing like Dead Composer Society.
Yeah, Dead Composer Society. And at the end, Mr. Baumgartner gets fired and they all stand on their desks and do the trilling ornamental riff of Queen of the Night as he leaves. No, I think it really just, I like the school. I think the school works. And I think that there's a lot of interesting angles that you could explore with the students at this school, sort of becoming better people and talking about why this opera, why music, why art matters to them. And like, that's a movie that I'm more interested in than a movie that half-asses trying to make an adaptation of The Magic Flute while also burdening it with a bunch of schoolboy shit.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do.
Would you recommend this movie though?
I mean, it's so bonkers.
It is.
If you want to watch something that's like really weird and bonkers and you get some side enjoyment out of seeing some gay boarding school shit, you have some stuff to look at here.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, if you're not at all curious about anything we've said, this is going to probably feel pretty boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you detest opera and have no interest in it, you will be bored for half this movie.
If the music is going to really bother you, you're going to get annoyed.
Yeah. You will not have fun sitting through this. And like, I get it. I'm not an opera person. And I would also venture to say this movie does not do a good job of translating what works about the opera. Kind of like a double strike against it in that respect. But it is a weird movie.
It is sort of fascinating from that angle.
Yeah.
I like the gay stuff. Papageno is a lot of fun.
Papageno is a lot of fun.
Yes, he is. Like, there are definite pleasures, I think,
had
here.
Yes.
Different Papageno.
Yes.
Papagay, yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's like a faint maybe is what I would say. Like, it's certainly strange.
It sounds like it's vaguely interesting to you. I would say go for it.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours or so out of your life.
Right. It's not
a little long.
This also clearly must be like a very personal project for the director. Mm-hmm. So this is clearly like a passion project in some respects. If you're interested in seeing that in that respect, then you have that also for you.
That was a long way to say maybe.
Yeah.
But you know, we're all, it's a valid take.
Yes.
That's all for this week. Guys, come back at us.
Come back at
in
us.
In 2 weeks. We'll do another mini episode and we'll talk about what we're going to do in the next month.
It'll be rom-coms, so we'll be talking February about, yeah, month of love. Love. So we'll be talking about what our rom-com movie's gonna be. Sounds like a stinker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Lee's seen it.
Put forward this movie.
I'm so ready.
I cannot wait to do it.
I am deeply fascinated by what this movie promises.
It sounds god-awful, yeah. And I've never felt so excited to hate something in a while, you know?
Facebook.com/whywatchpodcast is the Facebook page. Dratpack.com is the website. Podcast can be found in all the normal places. Follow, subscribe, rate, what have you there.
All right, should we...